Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. And you know, you can listen to The Takeaway anytime by subscribing to our podcast. You can find it on our website, thetakeaway.org, or on iTunes. Sarah Palin, champion of democracy, with a challenge for journalists everywhere.
Democracy depends on you. And that's why our troops are willing to die for you. So, how about, in honor of the American soldier, you quit making things up.
Sarah Palin wants a fiction moratorium for the media as she walks away from being Alaska's governor. Her new full-time gig, GOP media event. Palin meets her maker, the media. If it's stranger than fiction, it's The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning out there, everyone. I'm John Hockenberry. It's Monday, July 27th, and is it the last moment in the sun for Sarah Palin? The agenda for this midsummer week. Also, we have family values, kids and reality shows, and Ben Bernanke fighting for his job. Could be. But first, Marcus Mabry, international business editor for our partner, The New York Times. Is it the last moment in the sun for Sarah Palin now that she's walked away from the governorship of Alaska?
Well, John, you know, in many ways, one could argue, and she kind of summed it up, I think, with her farewell speech, Sarah Palin is the ultimate candidate of reality TV show America. It could only be in America, and it would make a phenomenal reality show. I think what you have to say about her is both for her fans, for the delight of her fans, and probably for the delight of her detractors as well, Sarah Palin ain't going nowhere.
Sarah Palin ain't going nowhere. And how's that don't make things up pledge working for you over at the New York Times, Marcus?
Well,
you're honoring that?
It was an interesting directive from the former governor of Alaska.
And you're having meetings on it all day at the Times?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, very good, Marcus. So more on that with the agenda with Marcus Mabry. But first, everything you need to know this morning in the headlines, high-level talks between the U.S. and China start today in Washington. President Obama, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, and Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner are all involved in the security and trade talks. In healthcare, House Democrats meet today for talks on the legislation. Still major differences within the Democrats on how to overhaul healthcare. Several other Beltway heavyweights are in the Middle East today. Defense Secretary Robert Gates is meeting with Israeli leaders. Special Envoy George Mitchell is in Egypt. Iran and Israeli-Palestinian peace lead the discussion. Gates says Iran should respond to U.S. diplomatic overtures on the nuclear question by September. North Korea appears to be open to new nuclear talks. It's out with a new cryptic statement that seems to refer to direct talks with the United States. French President Nicolas Sarkozy is now out of the hospitals. Doctors just cleared him after an overnight stay. He collapsed while jogging on Sunday. And staying in Paris, Alberto Contador is the Tour de France winner. Lance Armstrong took third place. Poor guy. Contador has won two of the last three tours. And the Space Shuttle Endeavour astronauts make one last spacewalk today. They're undocking from the International Space Station tomorrow. Asian markets are up, gaining more than 1% across the region. The Dow starts trading at 90.93. The S&P begins at 9.79. The NASDAQ kicks off at 19.65. Boy, you take a vacation and the entire recession is over. It's great to be back. Last night, Ben Bernanke faced the public. They talked about the economy and the unemployed. We want to hear your personal story about how the economy is affecting you at 877-8-MY-TAKE. But today we want a special call out to those of you who have been furloughed. Furloughed. What does it mean? You have a job, but you aren't getting paid. So what do you do about that? We're going to have some guidelines later in the show, but what does that mean in your life? 877-8-MY-TAKE or MyTAKE at thetakeaway.org.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Star Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at knightfoundation.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway.
Our government.
Healthcare.
Your government.
The economy.
Bailout.
Global financial recession.
Transportation.
Agenda.
Agenda.
The work that needs to be done.
What's going on?
And we ask, as we do every Monday morning, what is the agenda for this, a midsummer July week around the world? And the question that I have for Marcus Mabry, international business editor for The New York Times, and Rob Watson, BBC defense and security correspondent for our partners, the BBC, who joins us from London. Morning to you both, by the way.
Good morning.
And Marcus, you'd have a hard time knowing which was the most important ally to the United States this week, Israel or China. Huge meetings going on between both. Let's begin with China.
Well, you know, there is not to plug a competitor, but, you know, you got to do what you got to do. There's a great editorial in the Wall Street Journal by Hillary Clinton and Tim Geithner. And in it, they point out that 30 years ago, when the U.S. and China first established diplomatic relations, our economy was basically 14 times the size of the Chinese economy. 30 years later today, our economy is 3 times the size of the Chinese economy. It's getting closer and closer, and that economic reality says it all.
Well, let's listen to Timothy Geithner during his confirmation hearings in late January, and he stumbles at a particular point on an issue that I think is very, very touchy. And listen to this, and let's talk for a moment.
I do believe that it is a significant issue. As I said earlier, I believe it's important for the United States and for the global economy that our major trading partners operate with a flexible exchange rate system.
Flexible exchange rate system is like the central issue between the U.S. and China right now. Explain.
It is. Well, what it means is the Chinese do not allow their currency, as the Europeans do with the euro, as all the major economies in the world do, except for theirs. They do not allow their currency to float, the markets to decide what their currency should be in relation to other currencies. So what that means is the Chinese producers or exporters have an advantage that no one else's exporters do, because the government is making sure that their goods are cheap for you and me, and that our goods, the American goods that try to get in China, are expensive for the Chinese. So it is a major problem. It's interesting because Secretary Geithner has since he's actually got the nod and became the actual guy who could do something about this, or at least ask the Chinese to do something about this, he has reversed himself, and he no longer makes that important policy.
So not likely that this will come up, but North Korea probably will come up, correct?
It will definitely come up. You know, Secretary Clinton, she's made a great deal of talking about how everything's changed for North Korea, and she tried to say the whole strategic context for North Korea and international relations have changed, and they no longer have anyone on their side defending them and helping them become remain a rogue state. It's going to be interesting to see this week if that's actually true or not. Will the Chinese actually come out with the Americans and say North Korea must do certain things?
My question here, though, is this about testing the U.S. relationship with China? You need to do this for us. Is this about actual regional nuclear security? Or is this about actually some relationship between the United States and North Korea?
You know, I think it really is about the second one. I think it really is about regional security. That's what China's interests are concerned here. That's why China is not interested in North Korea continuing its current activities. So I think all those other things are just kind of, you know, peripheral issues. It's
right.
Really about the regional nuclear security of Northeast
Asia. And we'll be trying to figure out what this cryptic statement is out of Pyongyang this morning, which may suggest they want face-to-face talks with the U.S. So all of a sudden, we may be on a different platform there. Regional security is certainly on the mind in the Middle East. Rob Watson, Robert Gates, defense secretary, is in Israel to meet with the prime minister and the defense minister there. There's a slew of diplomats on their way to the region. First of all, what do you make of this full-court press regionally in the Middle East, Rob?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that this is physical evidence, if you like, of the Obama administration's determination to try and push through some kind of a peace agreement, a wider peace agreement in the Middle East.
And do we think here that the Iran nuclear question has played possibly into the hands of the Obama administration, in that if they can demonstrate to the Israelis that they can make progress on Iran nukes, that the quid pro quo is going to be some progress regionally on the Palestinian question?
Well, I guess the way I'd put it is rather like this, John, and that is that I think that the United States, the reason why Bob Gates is there, is partly this overall security guarantee to the Israelis on every front, saying to them effectively, look, we know we've been asking you to do some awkward things, some difficult things. We know that there are certain things you're worried about, but hey, don't worry. We're going to continue to be your best security buddy, and we're going to continue to supply you with whatever most advanced weapons you need to protect yourselves.
And here's Hillary Clinton talking about that specifically on the Face the Nation program yesterday.
Israel is a sovereign nation. Any sovereign nation facing what it considers to be an existential threat, as successive Israeli governments have characterized the possibility of Iran having a nuclear weapon would mean to them, is not going to listen to other nations.
Now, would you say, Rob Watson, that that's a suggestion that Israel can go it alone with Iran, or that this is a team effort, or that there's some sort of specific quid pro quo? Clinton did mention when she was on her Asian trip last week that there was some thought of a security shield that, the U.S. would put up over the region. Where does that stand?
How you wish sometimes these people would really spell out what they meant, eh? Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that I'd go
wrong
as far
profession.
As to say,
wrong profession.
I don't think I'd go quite as far as to say it was a green light, but I certainly think that perhaps the United States thinks it's kind of useful in its efforts to try and persuade the Iranians to back away from developing nuclear weapons to be able to say, well, you know, I mean, the Israelis, they're deeply worried and, you know, they're a sovereign nation and, you know, maybe we won't be able to rein them in. I mean, I still find it very difficult at the bottom of my heart to think that the Israelis would go ahead with a strike against Iran unless they knew that they'd had at least Washington's tacit approval. I mean, if you remember sometime last year when the Israelis were getting very fidgety about the Iranians, the head of CENTCOM made it pretty clear to Israel that a strike on Iran would not be helpful.
All right, quickly on Afghanistan, there is a suggestion this morning that perhaps the Afghan government is willing to allow a ceasefire with the Taliban in a particular province in Afghanistan to allow the presidential elections to proceed. Is that a sort of time out in the war in Afghanistan?
Well, it could be really interesting. If that was repeated in other parts of Afghanistan, then you've really got a very, very different dynamic. And clearly, I'm sure the Afghan government would like that. I mean, there doesn't seem to be much sign of it in other parts of Afghanistan. But clearly, if it was repeated, that would be big news indeed. And it's interesting that Britain's foreign secretary has been talking, or I should say re-emphasizing, the need for, in the long term, for there to be political reconciliation in Afghanistan, that no matter how many Taliban the Brits and the Americans kill, unless you bring the majority of them back into the system and get them to drop their weapons, well, then you're stuffed.
Right. Well, again, something to watch on the agenda all week here. Rob Watson, our partners at the BBC in London. Thank you, Rob, for being with us. And Marcus Mabry, before we go on Washington, good news. It seems Sotomayor will be confirmed this week. We expect a vote on that this week, but also health care will continue. And for the Obama administration, that's not necessarily going to be good news.
Well, you know, Sotomayor's likely confirmation out of the committee on Tuesday certainly is good news for the Obama administration. It's going to be interesting to see on health care. As long as the Democrats continue to negotiate with the Democrats, that is great news for the Republicans, because the Democrats themselves have not yet come to a deal that they all can back. It's very interesting. I think there's going to be a relationship between these two this week, and I think the Republicans will use it. It's going to be interesting to see how they do it and in what context. But I think they're going to use, you know, Sotomayor. She's going being elevated to the bench, even over some Republican votes, including Orrin Hatch,
right.
The Utah senator, for the first time in 33 years, voting against a nominee.
Yeah, I was surprised.
As if she were somehow so extraordinary. Ordinarily incompetent and just outrageous, and this president is incredible. He would dare to do this. You know, kind of the Republican rap on Obama has been he's overambitious, he's taking on too many things, trying to do too many big things at once. I think they're going to wrap up now. Sotomayor is an example of that, his overreaching. Health care, his overreaching. He's clearly a liberal. This guy's out of control. And I think they'll also be using subtly the Skip Gates, Gates Gate from last week. Reaching out to white male voters in particular in states like Indiana, Pennsylvania, who may have voted for Obama last time, to remind them that this guy is not like you and me.
So let's back up a second there. So the Gates issue was last week. I mean, I was on vacation last week. I sort of missed the whole thing, but I could tell that it dominated discussion.
Yeah.
If it doesn't proceed into this week as a discussion point, it suggests, as you're saying, a political vulnerability for President Obama going forward?
Absolutely. Any president who'd stand up there and from the bully pulpit say that any police department acted stupidly, they will be using that clip and that idea, that notion that this is something that would not, that those white male voters in particular in those swing states would not agree with. They would not have that perspective as Obama. And that will be, they'll use that again and again on different issues. Healthcare, Sotomayor, Wise Latina, et cetera, et cetera.
Except Reverend Wright, that looked significant in the middle of the campaign, but it didn't ultimately have long-term sort of legs, shall we say. Do you think the Gates thing could suffer the same fate as the Reverend Wright issue?
I think only if the economy were actually to turn around. And everyone agrees. The economy is probably, the market certainly seems to suggest it. The administration has suggested it. Seems to be bottoming out. But the fact is, if jobs are not recovering with it,
Right.
That's not going to
feel. And because it's a police officer, it's a bigger issue.
That's
in
exactly
some ways, right.
Right. And it gets,
We're done. Marcus Mabry, international business editor for the New York Times, and Rob Watson, BBC defense and security correspondent from London. Thanks to both. That's the agenda.
Thanks, John.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.
You know, you can catch the show live Monday through Friday. Thanks for listening. If you have any feedback or think there's any stories we should be covering on The Takeaway, contact us at 1-877-8-MYTAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. See ya.